2019 is kind of weird, but I'm taking it in stride.
Have you become the monster yet?
I'm becoming the monster that 2019 needs me to be, I think. Mm-hmm.
Well, hello there. This is Creative Block. My name is Kyle Marshall. I am the owner of Media Lab YYC, which is located in the beautiful Calgary, Alberta, Canada. And this is a podcast where I get to talk to artists and creative entrepreneurs about where they've been, where they are, and where they hope to be. This week's guest, Chris Taniguchi, is maybe somewhat familiar if you've ever listened to the very end of this podcast, because I thank him every single week. You'll soon learn about him being an animator and where he came from. I met him many years ago at a conference called VidCon, and since that time I have just been absolutely overjoyed to watch his career flourish and just see where his creativity takes him. It's a really interesting chat. I really think you're going to enjoy this a whole lot. At least I did. And as I am half human, then you should like it too. Listen, before we get into any of that conversation, I need to mention that Creative Block is a proud member of the Alberta Podcast Network, powered by ATB. The Alberta Podcast Network promotes and supports Alberta-made podcasts and connects their audiences with Alberta-made businesses and organizations. Now, this week, one of our sponsors is ATB. So, are you building a business and feel like you're at a crossroads? ATBX is a program that supports Alberta entrepreneurs. It's for people ready to disrupt and define their industries. It's an incubator. It's an accelerator. It's ATBX. More to the point, it is a 14-week accelerator program. It helps to support Albertan businesses in the market validation stage, and you receive mentoring and financial advising through the program. So if you want to find out more information about that, you can go to atb.com/ATBX. Lots of letters. So hopefully you can spell. Our other benefactor this week is Pod Summit. The Alberta Podcast Network, which is powered by ATB, is proud to sponsor this year's Pod Summit, Western Canada's premier podcast conference. Join us on June 22nd at Fort Calgary for a day of learning and connection making. The theme of this year's conference is After the Start. So here's what you're going to learn. 1. How to make your podcast stand out from the crowd. 2. How to breathe new life into your show if you've been podcasting for a while. 3. How to connect with your listeners and build a community that supports you. 4. Marketing tips and tricks to grow your show from hundreds to thousands of downloads. And finally, how to build different income streams with your podcast. Also, as a subpoint to this, I am the host of this year's Pod Summit. So, of course, I'm brushing up on my impersonations of Marc Maron, Roman Mars, and Michael Barbaro. So if that won't make you buy a ticket, I'm not sure what will. Listen, tickets are just $150, and you can get $25 off by using the promo code ILOVEPODCASTING, all lowercase. That's ILOVEPODCASTING, all lowercase, no spaces. Get your ticket at podsummit.com. All right, thank you to all the sponsors this week. Now let's get into my conversation with Chris Taniguchi. We talk about a lot of things, such as ukuleles, podcast artwork, and Captain America. Let's go to that now. Chris Taniguchi, thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, Kyle Marshall, it's a pleasure to be here.
Oh, great. You are calling in from the great state of California, but I mean, mm-hmm. I think where we should start is maybe you introducing yourself and telling people what it is that you do.
Yeah, my full name is Christopher Taniguchi. Some people call me Chris Taniguchi, and then other people on the internet call me by my channel name, which is Tanimato. I make cartoons on the internet. Some of those are me doing stories about my life. Some of them are animated music videos. And other times you'll find me working for other animators to make their content look shiny and whatnot. I think that sums up what I do.
Yeah. But yeah, animation is a big part of your life. So I'm super excited to talk about that because I don't really have much for talent, but I admire a lot of stuff that that I see from you. I will say, I don't know how long ago you made that video, but the video that you made of being scammed is still one of my favorite things that was ever uploaded. I think it's so funny.
I'm glad. That's quite a personal one. I think that's the first animated story I made, and I just was like, let's just start with my just open with my biggest insecurity, I guess, and just start.
I think it's a great way to lead, take that first step into that sort of thing. People love when people are vulnerable online.
Yeah, it's great for dating, too.
Hey, hi, I get scammed a lot. How are you? Yeah. Chris, let's go in the Wayback Machine for a little bit. Where were you born?
I was born in Washington State in America. I was born next to my twin. Wait, that's yes. not true. No, I was born alone in this world, and then my right. twin was thrusted next to me.
He was forced to be your brother, yeah.
Yeah. And then I had to adjust to not being the only Taniguchi for 25 years since.
I don't know if this is okay to ask, but I'm going to ask it anyways. Mm-hmm. Were you the first or the second?
Oh, yeah, I was the first.
You have been older longer then.
Yeah, to clear things up, so I have a twin, Nick. We collaborate a lot. He's my twin, and I love him, and he is the best brother on the planet. But, yeah, I was born first. Mm-hmm. 50 minutes of being all on my lonesome. That's like a full nature documentary I tell people.
That's right. 50 minutes. Yeah. I guess that shows how ignorant I am. I didn't think it would be that long between births if you have twins. But
yeah, usually it's not.
I don't really know much about anything.
No. You do. You do. That was an abnormality. And my poor mother had to wait for 50 minutes before the other one came out.
You know, knowing your brother as well as I do, because I know both of you, that kind of sums it up.
Yeah.
Nick kind of takes his time sometimes.
Yes. Yes. I can agree with that. But when he does decide to come out, he makes quite the entrance. So
he does. He does. So I'm interested about you. Is that where you grew up as well? Like, did you grow up in Washington State?
Yeah, I guess you could say that. I do have memories of living in Washington State, but they're if somebody asked me, like, oh, what's Washington like? It's hard to say anything other than, it rained a lot. There was snow and there was grass and trees, I guess.
right. There was some foliage of some kind.
Yeah, but you could say that about any place, really. So,
Yeah, Washington's great. Trees and grass, I guess. I think there's some houses there. It's all right. Yeah.
My grandma was there. You know, Washington.
Well, so did you then move somewhere? Like, where do you consider where you were, in your childhood, what do you consider home?
Yeah, I moved a lot as a kid. Okay. My dad is Japanese and my mom is American. So I think they were kind of torn between where we should end up settling. So we spent 4 years in Washington, moved back to Japan, I moved to Japan for the first time when I was 4 years old, and I spent like a couple years there. And ever since then, we kept moving back and forth between Japan and America, until finally after high school, I kind of settled down here.
Right. What do you think it was that made you choose to stick around in America rather than spending most of your time in Japan?
I think culturally, it was easier for me and Nick to fit in. Because when you're half ethnicity in Japan, it's easier to stand out. It's very homogenous over there. Right. And when you kind of stray in appearance and personality from your peers even just a little bit, you stick out like a sore thumb. And I was gonna say they, but you know, like other students at the time kind of didn't know what to make of us, and Everyone all around was super uncomfortable, so it was kind of easier to settle down in America, where, you know, land of the free and all that, but...
Right.
You know,
all that jazz, yeah.
Yeah, and jazz. And, you know, it was easier to be in a mixing pot because, you know, we were mixed and whatnot.
Well, is there anything that you appreciated about Japan while you were there?
Oh, I love the food.
Yeah, no, I bet. Yeah, I there was this time where I met another Japanese resident. I don't know how else to say it. From my time at Apple, I was actually sent down to California. And there was a bunch of other Apple employees there from all over the world. And so he was from the Ginzu store, I think. Anyways, that's not important. What is important, though, is that people were going out for sushi one day, and he refused. He's like, no, I come from Japan. I'm not eating sushi here in California. He did not believe that Americans could actually create good sushi. So
I would like to prove him wrong. I've tasted some pretty fantastic sushi around here. And in Canada. Good job, Canada.
Vancouver does some good job. Yeah. That's for sure.
Vancouver, home of the California roll, ironically.
Is that true?
Yes.
I did not know that.
True.
What do they... This is such a hacky comedian question, but what do they call California rolls in California?
They're just called rolls.
They are just called rolls? Okay. All right, great. I'm glad we cleared that up. Here's a question I like to ask people, because I think there's just so many different answers that come from it. Do you recall the first thing you ever became obsessed with?
Yeah, hold on. Cut out like a minute of me thinking. I think this is something that a lot of kids had in common.
Yeah.
But I was like obsessed... especially because I had a twin brother, but I was obsessed with the concept of fairness. And I definitely was rule obsessed, and it felt like I was wronged if ever my brother got to do something that I didn't.
Okay, I gotcha.
I remember one of my earliest memories was like freaking out because my because Nick, my twin, got to ride on a horse with my dad, who was like a horse riding expert, and I was riding on a horse with a stranger. And like if you look at it just like on a very human objective level, both of us were riding on horses. That's pretty insane and awesome.
Yeah.
And
it says he got your dad and you didn't.
Yeah, exactly. So Nick was wrong and Nick had to be punished, and I had to freak out and yell a lot. And there were like a bunch of situations my poor parents had to deal with where I felt something was unjust, and or Nick would feel like something was unjust, and that extended towards our late childhood, I think, and we became like sticklers for, you know, we would yell at people who cut in line for the longest time.
That's a hey, buddy, get to the back. does that still continue to this day? Do you think? Like, are you still like at the forefront? Like, this has to be fair and divvied out fairly, or has that kind of calmed down?
I fixed that. I think that was my biggest reason for unhappiness, was I felt like the world had to be just. Mm. And now I'd rather just be happy.
Right.
And it's been working. Like that was the biggest like switch I made in life, from like being an adolescent to an adult, that I think has made me feel happy, is like, well, cleaning's a good example, right? Like if you're like with your family at Thanksgiving, and you know, like you're done eating, and you know, say your family doesn't want to do the dishes, it's easier to think of like cleaning up after yourself as like, oh well, I want to show that I appreciated that meal, so I'm gonna clean my dishes. And hey, well, like, well, I'm done, like I'm doing the dishes anyways, like why not do other people's? Like that's an easier frame of mind, I think, to live in, rather than like, well, like Robert hasn't done his dishes today. I don't know how like a creative podcast has turned into my philosophy on cleaning up after myself, but
no, but it, I mean, what this dovetails with is something that I've been really thinking about a lot lately, and I haven't lived up to my own expectations with this yet, I don't think, or not, at least not fully, but there's this podcaster dude that I followed for years now, probably over a decade through multiple different shows. And his name is Jeff Cannata. He started on the Totally Rad Show years and years ago.
Looking him up?
with a C and two N's and one T. That's how you spell his last name, Jeff Cannata. But he has this idea that I really believe in, which is that I think that like actual kindness is like the most, well, he calls it like the most punk rock thing you can do today, because every if you're online and even in everyday life now, I find that there's this like push to like negativity where people have to be like the first to have their take on what whatever is going on in the world, or you can't allow other people to still like the things that they like. And it's like, you know what, just be kind to human beings and be nice to each other.
I'm actually on that team. Yeah.
Yeah. That whole concept is like so radical right now.
Yeah.
That it's that I kind of believe in that. It's like, yeah, no, just be good people and be kind to each other. And I think hopefully through that you can actually show people that there's a different way. That could be me just with like, I don't know, unbridled optimism, which is misplaced. But I like that idea.
I'm so on this team. Like, I think with the modern conveniences of the internet have allowed it to be easier than ever to be mad at somebody who's done wrong in the world, but it hasn't made it easier to do good for the world. And I think that still, like, though it's not as easy, it's so much more rewarding to try to make the world a better place and not just point out what there's an important, like, both are really important. It's really important to point out things that are lacking in the world, but it comes so easy and people are doing it anyways. So why not like try to put an effort into like cleaning up the lake instead of pointing at the trash in the lake, you know, like.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's just a great example, right? It's like, it's the difference between like, hey, complaining that there's trash in the street and being like, I'm just going to pick up this trash that's in the street. You know, you're just doing it because it's the right thing to do, not because you're trying to get rewarded for it. You're just doing a good thing.
Exactly.
And
it kind of, at some point it becomes a waste of time to try to figure out who dropped the trash. Just like,
just pick it up. Like, we can just fix this right now. And I think this is going to get into such a nerdy conversation. I was not anticipating this, but just because I just recently saw Avengers Endgame, no spoilers, but,
no spoilers.
But weirdly enough, he was never a favorite character of mine when I was growing up reading comics, but has become a favorite character in the movie versions, which is that this is what I love about Captain America so much, is that Captain America is all about like, I am the kind of the beacon of what America should be, like the prototypical, like what we think of what an American should stand up and do. And he's all about like, I'm just doing the right thing because it's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
And Steve Rogers was always a hero before he became a superhero. And I don't know, there's something about that story that's always impacted me a whole lot. So be like Captain America.
Yeah, we're on the same. Okay, that's good. That's a compliment coming from a Canadian.
That's right. I could make an Alpha Flight reference right now, but I will not.
Oh my
God. Not do that on
Don't
this
go
into
your obscure series. I read mainline Avengers. Jesus.
that's right. I don't need your Canadian superhero team.
Wait, Alpha Flight's Wolverine not started. Canadian. What?
Yeah.
No way. I didn't know that.
So I guess going back to the thrust of your story here then, I guess back here in the United States, what's striking your fancy? Like as you're, you know, in high school and about to leave, what did you think you were going to do?
I thought I was going to be an inventor.
Okay, great.
And that's what I had my mindset to when I was... In middle school, I kept a book of invention ideas and drawings and whatnot. And I thought, oh, yeah, you know, I come from like a big idea family is what I realized. Yeah. And so
what do you mean by that? Like, who else is having big ideas?
Oh, I mean, like, this all funneled down from, like, I think my mom's giddiness to talk to strangers about some new project that she wants to do. And then Nick and I started to do that as well. So I would say that the big idea people in our family, and that's not a compliment. I don't think that's necessarily a compliment. Sorry, Mom.
Okay.
Because I was so filled with ideas of things that should get made, that's probably what led to me wanting to be an inventor. Mm-hmm. And I kept a record of all these things. When I entered high school, I finally realized, like, oh, to invent things, you actually need to learn engineering. And that's you have true. To have a pretty solid understanding of mathematics, which I was okay at. But, like, it wasn't something that I was comfortable doing all the time. And so having ideas is one thing, but, like, doing it was what the world was struggling with.
Yeah. You just wanted to be the person who's like, I just have an idea. Just make it a reality. I don't need to learn this math stuff.
Yeah, or, like, I thought that, like, patents were just like, you tell the government your cool idea and then they let you make right, money out of it.
That's like, hey, iPhone, okay, patent it, great.
Oh, thank
okay,
you second thank idea you, thank you. I'll take that money.
But
one day I you know, it's funny because, like, while I was coming up with these ideas for inventions, I was, without knowing that it could be a job, I was drawing and animating from elementary school on, and it wasn't in hopes of somebody giving me $1 million. It was just because I wanted to impress my internet friends by putting animation on DeviantArt or whatever.
Right. Oh man, I remember DeviantArt. So what was your go-to drawing? Like, what were you drawing?
So I was inspired by these. There were these, like, surrealist animation groups on Newgrounds, and this is getting really niche, but there was, like, they weren't calling themselves surrealists at the time, or still don't, but it's the best way of describing it. There were these surrealist animation group that would branch off of this main group called the Clock Crew.
Okay.
On Newgrounds, and the best way I can, like, break down their, like, weird quirk is that they would animate characters that were everyday objects that had clocks for faces. They largely made stories that were based off of in jokes that they had in their community. So I got obsessed with that. I made a bunch of videos and nobody liked them. But I wanted to impress people still, so I just tried harder. And I made movies about ninjas and secret agents and basically everything that was popular in the 2000s.
Yeah.
And
Do you have any copies of those old movies?
Well, let's see. I had a free web... what's it called? Freeweb.com. Let's see. Oh no, nope, nope. Nope, it's gone.
Okay.
What a shame. Oh,
that's too bad. All the stuff being lost to the digital wasteland.
I know.
What I like about that though is that you were not discouraged from creating more, which could have happened were you a different personality, but you were actually like, no, I'm going to make something good that these people are going to respect.
Yeah.
Do you know why you decided to go that route instead of being like, oh, these people didn't like it, I'm never going to make another thing ever again?
I think it was ego. Like, I couldn't understand why people didn't like it, so it made me want to try harder. And that's like a big, like, thing when you're a kid, right? You're not aware of your shortcomings. And it's just assumed that you should be famous tomorrow.
Yeah, right.
And I'm glad, though, that I wasn't, like, a virtuoso at art. Like, this is something that I value a lot today is that it's a skill that I had to hone, and I'm still honing art. And I can point to kids who are growing up and thinking like, oh, I needed to be like the kid who was getting like awards in second grade for their art.
Right.
You don't have to be that person. And
no.
And you could, in fact, be like really terrible. And so long as you have like some sort of work ethic, it can kind of gradually take you to a place where, you know, you make decent artwork and whatnot. I think that's much cooler than being a prodigy nowadays.
You can even go the other way where it's like your illustrations don't necessarily even have to be like amazing, as long as you can tell your story really well. Is Don Hertzfeld, is that the guy who does
stick
figure animations and stuff like that? Which I love his stuff. I was watching that on early internet.
Yeah.
stuff like that. Not that you would ever want to or need to, mm-hmm. but this is also what makes great teachers and mentors, is the people who actually struggled.
Yeah.
The people who it came naturally to, it's really hard for them to be like, oh, well, I understand what struggling is like, because they never had to in their life. And I actually read this book here mm-hmm. a few months ago, which I'm going to blank on the name of. But that was the whole purpose of the book was like, we honor these people who did have this innate gift, mm-hmm. and they're kind of like the outliers. There's not a whole lot of people that are like, oh, they're Mozart and they just became great at music, or mm-hmm. whatever the great artists were. It's like the 99% of people have to work at it, and they have to work at it a lot, and then they become good and become great at that sort of thing.
Yeah.
It's not like you're failing because you're not immediately great at 2 years old.
I think that that's fantastic. I think more people need to know that. I think more people need to realize that you can be mediocre and be so happy. And like I as you were saying, like, your artistic ability needs to be just good enough to get the story out there,
mm-hmm.
and you've contributed to our right. modern ethos, you know, like you're doing great.
yeah. Now I sometimes get self-conscious because we're friends, mm-hmm. and you're, I would say, probably like a generation younger than I am.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering, I don't even know if you would have a sense, because you wouldn't have had the opposite of this,
mm-hmm.
but what was the internet like for you at a young age? Because I'm assuming you were probably on it at, I guess, I don't know, what age would you say you got onto the internet for the first time?
Eight. I was eight years old. Yeah. When I went on a forum for the first time.
Ooh.
And fell in love. It was like a forum for a book I liked, and then I was like, oh, there are other people who want to talk. And then I feel like it's funny because I call myself an early adapter, is like,
yeah.
And I'm talking to you, who was probably on for much longer, but at the time it was still like something that I couldn't talk to my friends about, you know, like friends at school were, I guess some of them were discovering what the internet was. But most of them, it's still kind of foreign. We were all kind of like toddlers on forums, I guess. And,
It's hard to describe, like, if you went to like, I don't know, maybe a teenager nowadays, but the early internet was so wild. Like, it's so much different than what it is nowadays. There's less people on it. That's probably why.
Yes.
But like, I did not. I always have to try and remember. I know I got the first family computer we got, I was in grade 7.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like 13-ish. And then I don't think we got the internet until a couple years later. So I was probably like 15.
Mm-hmm.
But I was dial-up. So
aww,
it was like,
so cute,
it was not a
Kyle
great experience.
Marshall.
I know. And then someone would pick up the phone and you'd be off the internet again. It was awful. And then I went to university.
Mm-hmm.
And so 18 was kind of like the real first time I got like actual internet access. I still remember going to the computer lab, and it was probably like not great internet, but a page loaded in less than like 20 seconds. And I was like, whoa, this is amazing.
Wow, the future.
The future is now. And then, of course, I would go into like Simpsons forums and stuff like that. That was my get down at that time.
What a classy man. What a life.
Yeah, what a world. I always thought there's so much hope for the internet. This is going to be like the total future, and like everyone's going to be able to learn from each other. And then it turned out not to be that necessarily. We shout at each other. But I think in some pockets, because I mean...
Yeah, there's an undercurrent of learning, I think.
I think so too, because I think, as much criticism as people like to level at it, I'm still a YouTube fan in general.
I
remember 2005 when YouTube became a thing, and I was just like, this is amazing, all this stuff.
Oh, I was so embarrassed. I was a naysayer when it first came out.
Because before then, there was a few different websites that would have like video uploads, but like, I don't know, YouTube was a bit of a different thing. It was like, it was fast, it was easy to share it with people. Like, I don't know, there was just some interesting stuff going on there.
Oh, man. I remember going, I was a Newgrounds kid, and when YouTube was first making the rounds in like 2005, 2006, I very specifically remember saying, well, why would I ever need this? I have Newgrounds. And,
that's right.
Yeah.
I have Newgrounds. I have my Geopet. It's never going to get better than this.
This is the peak.
This is the peak of humanity right here. Because I know you and your brother actually made YouTube videos. What was the starting point for that? Who decided to start to create on there?
Our older brother Kenny was the first person who had any like online video literacy, in that he was the one coming back from high school from his like film classes and showing off these techniques that he would learn with the camera. And coincidentally, also animation. But our older brother Kenny had the camera, and I was learning how to play ukulele at the time. Mm-hmm. And I one day after I showed him that, like, oh, I can play "I'm Yours" on the ukulele, like a million other teenage boys and girls. He said, well, darn, once you learn a song on the ukulele, you have to record it for the internet to watch. Like, what are you doing? And so...
Have you even learned the ukulele if you haven't put it up on YouTube
exactly.
yet?
So he encouraged us to join in on the ongoing YouTube ukulele boom of 2008.
Mm-hmm. It is pretty remarkable how many musicians were playing ukulele on YouTube at that time.
Well, we didn't stop. That was the problem.
Right. Okay.
And, you know, I think it still has its place in culture, but luckily it's not like, I don't know. I feel like it had its time in the light, and I'm glad it's kind of like toned down a little bit. I want to just enjoy my ukulele tunes in a more quiet setting, I guess.
Yeah, right.
Where, like, not every two blocks you're hearing somebody play Soul Sister. sorry, that's mean. I learned that song.
No. All right, here's Wonderwall. And then they just launch into it.
That's how I started with YouTube, was making a music channel with my twin. That's how I met you.
that is. We met at... which VidCon was it? Was it the third or fourth?
It was third. I do believe.
Third year, okay.
Yeah,
the first year they went over to the Anaheim Convention Center. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is going to be so self-serving.
Oh, please.
But what do you remember about meeting me for the first time?
We played...
Also, talk about how handsome I was, but continue.
I mean, that's like not even questionable. Right. I remember Nick going off and finding strangers. I remember meeting you with fellow YouTubers Casey Ostrom and Colin Cochran.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you were in the same room at the time, but we played a game called the Topic Bowl, I think it was called, where you just throw a bunch of questions into a bowl along with a bunch of other people in the group. And then you randomly draw from the bowl, and then you just go around answering. And... Mm-hmm.
I was a part of that. That was down in the hotel lobby.
Yeah, that was my favorite memory from first VidCon with you, because the questions got deep, and I just got to really dig in with some people that like talking about deeper subjects. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I was totally down. And that was like the one year that I really pushed myself to go and try and meet other people. Because I don't even remember why. It's probably because I was just commenting on people's videos. But like, Mitten Sony kind of knew who I was.
Oh, yeah.
And then he introduced me to Casey, who I was actually already watching her videos. I was like, oh, this is really cool. I already watch your stuff. And then introduced me to Cullen. And so I started watching his
Jen
stuff,
was there really also, liked. By the way. Yeah.
Yeah, Jen Hall, yeah. Who I go to VidCon with every year.
Wonderful human.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And yeah, then I met you and your brother. And it was just like, oh, who are these interesting people? And then I started watching your stuff after that, too. So it was... It's a weird meeting all these different creators, and then I've kind of just been watching from afar as you kind of changed directions here and there, but it's been cool to watch.
That is a lot of fun to meet creative people and see them testing the waters as the years go by.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fun to see people settling into like a routine, and it's also fun to see people like breaking from their regular creative rut and like trying to find something new. Like, man, I just want all my artist friends to be successful, but the journey is really fun to watch. Also,
there's struggles with everything, I realize, but yeah, I like how everyone has been not necessarily doing the exact same thing for years and years and years. They all tried like different random things, and I actually find that whether if it's not posting on YouTube frequently, but even like doing like quick posts on either like Instagram or Twitter posts or whatever it happens to be, I think that there's value in those types of creations as well.
Yeah, I agree.
What's your relationship with YouTube now?
I'd say that my connection with the music side of YouTube has died down, and that's a bit sad because. You know, Nick and I still write songs, but we don't necessarily have an avenue to share them yet. Right. With the exception of when I started my animation channel, I started combining the songs I would make with animation. And those, in a sense, took off. I would say they were relatively popular and a lot of eyeballs mm-hmm. got to, you know, see them. And ever since then, in terms of music, I had to change the format of my songs to be shorter so that they could be animated, which I think is a fun challenge anyways. And, it's easier to kind of figure out what kind of music I make if they're in bite-sized chunks instead of, you know, full verse chorus format.
I think it's interesting where there is sometimes like that arbitrary restriction that you put on yourself.
Yeah.
So it's like, I can't make a necessarily like a 4-minute song. I have to make whatever, a 2-minute or a 1.5-minute song. And there's just different things you have to do.
I'm having so much more fun with those restrictions. So I think it's an okay trade-off. And then other than that, I got mixed in with, because of work, I got kind of mixed into this fascinating corner of YouTube that is the animated storytime community. And this all happened because I started working for a YouTuber named Alex Clark as one of his assistant animators. And this was about 2 years ago. I started working for Alex Clark. And then since then, I became his lead animator, and I've been helping him make an animated video about his childhood once a week, and it was crazy.
that's a big schedule, especially for animators, right?
Yeah, once a week is insane. We animate like 30 seconds of content a day individually. Wow. And so, oh man.
Was Alex actually doing much of the actual animation at the end?
No, I'm kidding. We started off where, you know, he would dictate how he wanted to animate something, and then we would split the work half and half. And as time went on, he wanted me to take on a larger role because he wanted to write more scripts and he wanted our pipeline to go faster. So I became lead animator and kind of took on a majority of animation duties, I would say. But Alex has always been very heavily involved with the artistic process. And I don't think he'll ever stop being involved with the artistic process. But, like, I can pretty proudly say that I got to have, like, my own artistic stamp on his work, I think. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it's actually kind of funny. I stopped. My contract with Alex ended in April, and I decided to start working for a different tiny studio after that, just because, like, you know, I got curious about new places.
Well, you've had that experience and stuff like that. Now, what is this, like, a studio that makes YouTube video animations, or is this like short films sort of thing?
Well, I'm kind of sad because it's not too related to my dearest YouTube animation community. It's kind of off where I work in this small studio in North Hollywood making animation pilots animated TV shows. And yeah, it's really fun. I get to, my favorite part is I get to spend more time on the animation. And I don't have to rush through it, but I do miss that feeling of getting something out every week, and then, you know, people's eyeballs are on it.
I would imagine, though, too, that just with your experience there now for the last couple of years, that is an interesting skill set that you now have, which is just like, if you need to pump something out, you could pump it out if you absolutely needed to.
Yeah.
Having that time to, like, really flesh things out, I'm sure, is a nice trade-off.
Ah, man, I really feel like I've created an ability, like a little muscle in myself, where if I flex it, I can make content quickly and not sweat the small stuff. It hasn't really affected my personal project, because I guess I haven't had the chance to try it personally, because, you know, work would always take priority over stuff I would make at home. Animating for like 8 hours and then coming home and then animating
doing more
again has always been kind of a hardship. But I'm actually practicing a habit where no matter what I do, no matter how little I do, I'll animate for an hour, and my goal setting is not going to be content based, it's going to be time worked on, and after that I'll like get myself like ice cream or something, you know.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Ice cream is always good.
Yeah.
I don't want to blow past it too quickly. I just want to know, where did you go to school to learn animation?
Oh, yeah. I went to an art school hidden in Orange County, California. It's this tiny temple of an art college hidden within a canyon called Laguna College of Art and Design. That's my best way of describing it. It looks like a little temple. Hidden in a canyon that you wouldn't see otherwise, that's surrounded by a bunch of statues.
You have to make a sacrifice every morning or else the door won't open.
Yeah. But
other than that, it was great.
Yeah, the sacrifice is my sleep and sanity for 4 years. But I actually had a really good experience there. Sure, it was like stressful, but I really did learn a lot. I had to do like a lot of homework too, though. Mm-hmm. Not like real homework. Like I had to learn some things on my own to apply it to my career. But for the most part, I owe a large part of my artistic abilities to that school. So,
yeah. What made you decide to choose that over like any other one?
Well, I think a lot of people might find this encouraging, but like, I, like many other college students, aspired to go to the top animations college, which would be California Institute of the Arts in Valencia, California.
And CalArts, is that the abbreviation?
Yeah, that's CalArts.
Yeah.
It's the school that a lot of Disney animators ended up going to and graduating from. And so, you know,
does Disney even do animation anymore, though, really?
That is a messy question, Kyle Marshall.
Yeah, I know. I don't want to open up that kind of worms necessarily. But,
you know, like the consensus was anybody that's anybody came from CalArts, and your best way to be rich and famous and successful in the animation industry would be to go there. And so I got like kind of hypnotized by that idea, and I applied, and I failed. And Laguna College of Art and Design was my second choice.
Gotcha.
And for a good year or so, I thought I was doomed and never going to be successful. And then for a good year or so, I was contemptuous of that other school, and I would like kind of try to tear them down to make myself feel better. And as of late, my goal is to not feel spiteful or regretful about where I ended up and just keep practicing. And I think it's been working out, and I would love to tell as many people as possible that, like, hey, you don't have to go to the college of your dreams. You're going to end up fine. Just keep practicing art. It's going to be okay.
Be grateful. Be Captain America.
Yeah. Right? Thanks, Cap.
Think, Cap. But okay, that's great then. So, like, when you were nearing the end of that, like, what was the, how did you go from graduating from that school to working with Alex Clark?
Ooh. Well, I'm happy to talk about this because you kind of played a big part in my in-between phase between college and a career in animation.
Oh.
So this is the gap year. This is like the scariest part of anybody who is going to art school, I think. You know, you hear horror stories about having to spend a year as a, or like 5 years as a barista before anything happens. Mm. Or like, I had to move into my parents' house, or I went on a farm, or I became a fireman and I quit art forever. Like, this is the year after you graduate is where you kind of find out if you're going to be able to survive or not. And I was barely getting by. I was living in low income housing at the time. And the way I was paying rent was I was slowly draining my savings and also slowly replenishing it by doing freelance jobs with people that I would find on the internet. So I was trying to impress strangers and woo them into paying me like $500 or so to do a project. And Kyle Marshall, I gotta say, you were a big supporter of mine out of college.
That's right, because I decided I needed to do 20 different podcasts.
So. Thank you for creatively blossoming into a podcast maniac.
Yeah, that's basically what it is. Yeah, because, I mean, it's no secret. I thank you at the end of every episode that I do. But you designed the artwork at of this show, as yes, well as my other two shows, Assumptions and Putting It Together.
Yeah, absolutely. Am I allowed to pick favorites for your podcast?
Yeah, go ahead.
Covers. My favorite is still Assumptions.
This one is awful. Why am I on this show? I hate it.
I still love the image for Assumptions.
Yeah, I think it turned out really well.
But like, I always enjoy working with you on these projects because one, the ideas that you come up with for your podcast are always like really inventive and interesting. Two, you'll come up with a premise for art and then leave the rest really vague, and you'll allow me to like play with an idea. And then also you're very good at notes for art. You're a good commissioner. You're good at feedback.
I do have a lot of experience in feedback in other fields, but I mean, it's to pull the curtain back. Yeah, there was, at least for the last couple that we did, we actually got on another Skype call, video. And so I could actually see exactly what you were doing kind of in real time.
Yeah.
I just know although I don't love calling myself an artist, although sometimes I need to.
You are.
It's I think, having been in that situation before, it's better, at least for me and with collaborators, if it's like I do have a very concrete idea of what I want, but it's like, but I want your creative freedom, because sometimes that will spark like, oh, that is a better idea. Yeah. Do that. That's a great, that's better than what I had in my mind.
Yeah.
Because nothing is also worse than being the exact opposite and being like, Hey, Chris, I need a podcast artwork. It's called Creative Block. Just create something. Like, that's not helpful either.
That's a nightmare. Yeah. Some constraints are important, and your feedback is concise, so it gives me a good direction to go in when I'm done with my drafts and whatnot. So, yeah. I really enjoyed working for you, working with you, I guess. And then I just did a bunch of commission freelance projects month to month for about a year until I applied to a small animation studio, Alex's Place, using the work I did during that year as my portfolio.
Nice, nice.
And it worked. So I mean, great. Like,
now, were you in animation at that time too, or was it just like illustrations?
A good majority of it is illustrations. Some of it's character design. Some of it's graphic art. You know, it runs the gambit. I got to animate a logo. That made me really happy because I drew the project I'm thinking of is like some volcano character hugging another volcano character, and that turns into a logo or something. I got to do weird stuff, cool. And it paid off, and I'm glad.
So I guess turning your attention now to the future, you have this newer job, but is there anything in the future that you're driving towards? Is there any, like, if in the next 5 years, if it was like the perfect future that you have envisioned for yourself, Chris Taniguchi, what would that be?
So right now, in terms of goals, I've been telling people that what I really want is more of the same, but better.
Okay.
And the thing that makes me happy about that goal is, like, it doesn't depend on anybody else. It just means, like, I would love to perfect the art of telling these stories. I would love to hone my craft so that I can impress people more with animation. And I would love to bring my friends into my creative projects more so that I can, like, kind of celebrate my connections and friendships through animation. And
if you tell me that I get to be a voice actor someday.
Oh, Kyle Marshall. wait for that letter to arrive at your doorstep.
That's right. That's cool though. Like, yeah, so you want to have like more collaboration and stuff going on too.
Yes. With my friends. With my
not with other people, just with friends, yeah.
Well, you'd be surprised, you know, some strangers want to collaborate and whatnot.
Oh, okay.
not to speak ill of any like people that I don't know that want to collaborate with me, but I don't know. I'm just like, there are people like you whose work I'm familiar with that I'd love to contribute to. And there's only a finite amount of time in the world, and I really want to make something with you, Kyle Marshall.
It's going to happen one day because I have too many ideas that I just can't execute on right at this very moment. So, well, I'm sure I know it's going to happen at some point.
Yeah.
I know you probably get asked this all the time, mm-hmm. but I'm going to ask it anyways mm-hmm. because that's the type of interviewer I am.
Mm-hmm.
do you ever want to have worked on like a feature film, like an animated feature film?
I feel like the stories I like telling get wrapped up pretty quickly, if that mm-hmm. makes sense. And yeah, yeah. The companies that make feature films for money aren't really in the realm of animation that I like doing. Mm-hmm. So I have a feeling that it's in the foreseeable future, you're just going to see a lot of short films from me, or maybe TV length stuff. And I'm very comfortable with that. I feel very happy making small things that pack a punch.
I mean, I think we've talked about this not on a podcast, which is weird because that's all my conversations nowadays is recorded. But it is, I am somewhat disappointed. As much as I am a lover of like Pixar and some of the stuff that Disney does, uh-huh. And like, this is no jab towards 3D animation. I do enjoy 3D animation.
Oh, none at all.
There is something that is lost mm-hmm. when there's no 2D animation being made much in North America. Absolutely, if we go into like Japan and other countries mm-hmm. in Europe and stuff, there's a lot of 2D animation still being made. But I would love to see more feature-length films in the 2D animated style.
I like that, too. I think it's dearly missed. And it's variety, it's not about ranking. It's about variety. And like, I'm so not excited by the idea of comparing which is better, 3D or traditional.
It's for me, it's not about like this or that. It's like this and that. We can have both of them at the same time.
I want and for sure. I need my ampersand.
That's right. Well, Chris, thank you so much for joining me here today. This has been a great conversation, I think.
Kyle, I'm so happy I got to talk to you. They're always really meaningful conversations, and they make me really happy.
I've just been picking questions out of a hat here the entire time.
So Kyle!
If people wanted to continue following you, what's the best way to do that online?
Yeah, I'm everywhere on the internet that it comes to mind, except for Snapchat, maybe, as Tanimato. That's Tanimato. I'm mostly on YouTube and Twitter. And if you'd like to say hi, say hi. I'd love to. I mean, I'm sure anybody who listens to this, I would love to have a nice conversation with you.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Before we end off here, I do have to ask, because I never asked, is there any secret meaning behind your screen name other than it sounds like tomato?
So I made Tanimato after throwing a bunch of names at my friend Rebecca, and she said, go back to the drawing board. Everybody has some weird extension of their animation persona where they, you know, said, hey, I'm gonna just say Chris Animates or something. And so instead of Chris Animates, I made it phonetically sound like the Japanese word animato, and then I combined that with my last name, Taniguchi, so it's Tanimato.
Oh, okay. What does the Japanese word mean?
It means it's my family name, but also it means like mouth of the valley.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So now you know. That's a little secret.
One.
Yeah. That's why my name is Tanimato.
I love it.
Yeah.
Thank you again.
Cool. Kyle, thank you.
Well, there you go. Thanks again to Chris for being such an open and fun interviewee. Thanks to the Alberta Podcast Network, to ATB, and to Pod Summit this week. If you have any suggestions for people you'd like me to talk to, even if that's you, please send those to info@medialabyyc.com. And most importantly, thank you for listening. Let other people know if you enjoy it. We'll be back again in a couple of weeks. Have a great day.